Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schlankhofer, where we talk about all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. There are many threats on the horizon, yet we cannot rely on true and accurate media coverage of many of these issues. These threats are propagated from the mainstream media seeking to tell only one side of the story. In fact, this propagation can even be considered biased propaganda. This is a legitimate threat to you, your family, and our nation, and here on Civil Defense Radio, we seek the facts that others leave out. Remember, your tomorrow may depend on today's preparedness. Now, here is your host, Preston Schlankhofer.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio. I'm your host, Preston Schlankhofer, coming to you from the Strategic Command and Control Center, deep within the Civil Defense Radio bunker. Before we get to our great guests, I'd like to ask you to help us out with the almighty algorithms by liking, sharing, and commenting on our shows. Our mission is to educate Americans of the need for a new American civil defense structure. To accomplish this task, we must also educate them on the many real dangers that we face as a nation today. And that's why we bring you so much information about the threats. This week we have J.R. Nyquist. Jeff is a real journalist, a national security expert, and an expert on China and the dirty dealings that they are always involved in, especially when it comes to our national security and that of our friends. Jeff is also an accomplished author with multiple books, and you can find those on Amazon.com. You can also find Jeff at jrnyquist.blog. That's NYQUIST.blog. And you can read his regular postings there. So, Jeff, welcome to Civil Defense Radio.
I'm sorry. Yes, thank you for having me. Very good.
Yes. One of the biggest threats that I see out there is China. And that's why I wanted to have you on the show today, because I first got introduced to you through a radio podcast with Frank Gaffney called Secure Freedom Radio. And whenever you're on there, you know, my ears perk up and I listen to what you have to say very intently. I think you have your finger on the pulse of what's going on with China, and I would like to have you help inform our audience out there, because we've got a lot of friends out there that are also concerned about China and the threat that they pose to America. So can you give us an overview of the Chinese threat and the intelligence problem that we face?
Yes. Well, China is a very serious threat to the U.S. People talk about, you know, climate change or whatever being a threat, but the real threat is, of course, of people is other people. That's always the real threat that we're talking about.
I agree.
And China is a totalitarian regime. It's communist. Their ideological goal is to destroy capitalism, which means to destroy America. And of course, they have their Chinese aspects of tradition, which is to build their own kind of imperial empire. And then you have the actual record. How I got into this is that years ago, I was involved in, I was a political science student. I was a graduate student in a PhD program. And I actually read the Soviet defector literature, and I was kind of shocked. When I read it, I realized that nobody else really was paying that much attention to it. People would read one defector or a couple, but they wouldn't look at the whole thing and try to see that there was a larger sense of what the communist bloc was doing and what it was. And that China was an integral part of it, always. Whatever its disputes with the Soviet Union, and that its objective was to destroy the United States. Not just, you know, gain advantages over us or dominate us, destroy us. That was one of the things I came to understand. And the other thing I came to understand was that we have vulnerabilities. We've always had vulnerabilities, and we don't see our own vulnerabilities. It's very human. As individuals, we typically don't see our own faults. It takes a person of introspection and reflection to see their own faults. And that is kind of one of the goals of life. One of the disciplines of life is to see your own faults. But we as Americans, we don't see our own faults. We don't see our weaknesses. And among our weaknesses is that we actually are very vulnerable. And we think of ourselves as invulnerable, as all powerful. And it's just not the case. Because I'll give you an example. We fought the Cold War, right? Against the Soviet Union. There were all these, supposedly, we were opposing communism. And the Soviet Union was pointing thousands of nuclear warheads at us, tens of thousands actually, in missiles with multiple warheads and bombers. And we had no real bomb shelter system. It was, if you built a bomb shelter under your house, you had one, but or if you happened to be near a government building that was built at a time when they were mandated to put them under them, you might be able to get to it if you knew it was there. But we don't have any kind of civil defense. And if you call FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, they'll give you little brochures that are about as ridiculous as can be.
Yeah.
It's like you call them up, and if you live in Los Angeles, years ago, I lived in the Southern California area. It's like, oh yeah, you're supposed to go out to the desert to this site and pitch a tent. And it's like, really? Well, where's water? Where's sanitation? What about fallout? You know, you can't dig a bomb shelter in the hard pan of the desert. You can't even dig a trench. It's too hard. You need a tractor or something, or drilling equipment.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't believe the kind of plans that they had. They were just a joke. And so we were anti-communists without bomb shelters, right? So how serious is that? As one of the Russian spies, Soviet spies during the Cold War, who writes under the name Viktor Suvorov, his actual name was Vladimir Rezin, liked to say in some of his books is Americans are not serious people. And we are, in some sense, caught up in images. We're into television, and you're into movie stars, and we're into celebrity. And we're into what looks good and what makes us feel good, but we're not into the truth, and we're not into reality as much. We're somewhat skewed. We think of ourselves as realists, but we aren't really. And of course, the great cop out that everybody says is, "Well, I'd rather be dead if there was a big war, nuclear bombs went off. I'd rather be dead." No, you wouldn't. You know. I know of a 91-year-old man who would occasionally complain that he was anxious to die, and when he got cancer, he went right for the chemotherapy, and he's doing very well. But he decided to live, and I think that no matter how miserable you think of your circumstances, you will want to live.
Yes,
and it's not also nuclear war. That's another thing. It's been exaggerated. I mean, it's terrible, but. You know, like I think they made a movie out of the book On the Beach, if I recall right. I never saw it. I think Gregory Peck was in it, but it kind of depicted a nuclear war as radiation covers the planet and kills everything. It's not true. That's not how nuclear war works.
No.
You're going to probably survive whether you want to or not, unless you live in a downwind of a target area that where it's ground bursted, you know, and hydrogen bombs are a lot cleaner than atomic bombs, but people don't, and they don't know the difference between alpha and beta emitters or any of that other stuff. So Americans just, it was convenient for them to think, and also nuclear winter, by the way, which was a fabrication of the KGB on orders of Vandenberg. There was no nuclear winter. It's not a real phenomenon. You can't, when the government study was finally done on whether nuclear winter would be caused by a full-blown hydrogen bomb war, they said, no, it wouldn't happen. There would not be any nuclear winter. In order to produce nuclear winter, you would have to make a nuclear weapon the size of the Empire State Building, requiring more weapons-grade uranium than all the uranium they think is on the Earth. So we'd have to go to the moon to mine uranium to make the bomb. It would cost many times over the gross national product of every country in the world.
Oh, wow.
You know, their annual output to produce such a weapon. Now, that would never happen. No one would ever make a bomb that big just to blow a hole in the Earth's crust to cause nuclear winter, the actual hydrogen. When you think about the meteors that have struck the Earth, or the volcanic eruptions that have had 300 million 1 megaton bomb equivalents, and the Earth is still here, we didn't have nuclear winter. Yeah, it affected global temperatures. We've had probably little ice ages because of these eruptions that happen, you know, I don't know, every so many 10,000s of years or hundreds of thousands of years. But our little firecrackers, our little hydrogen bombs compared to what nature can do is nothing. And all the animals and plants, they've survived all of those events. And humanity survived at least for whatever, 180 to 200,000 years that men have been on this planet, according to science. So, hey, you know, it's not the end of the world. And you know, we better be preparing to survive because our enemies are. Russia and China have serious civil defense programs. They want to defend their population. And why don't we? That is a terrifying thing because they might decide to go to war with us knowing that we're vulnerable and they're not as vulnerable. Because in war, people do really crazy things in war. I mean, if you think of World War II, how crazy is that? And you think, oh, well, nobody would be crazy enough to, you know, cause tens of millions or hundreds of millions of deaths. Oh, yeah, they've done it before. What do you think? They won't do it again? This is history, man, and it repeats itself.
Potential adversaries, they all have robust civil defense programs. And we have this mutually assured destruction strategy that means that we get destroyed and everybody else wins because they have their programs to save their people, and then they come over and they get to pick up all the stuff that we leave behind, and so now they have all the stuff and they have the land. So I mean, nuclear war, I don't see that as the highest probability. I see other types of threats that kill the people and leave everything else intact, especially the land that that China, you know, they've talked about taking over the United States before, and they want the land so that they can feed their people.
Yeah, China has a problem with too many people and not enough land, and if it's true that a grand solar minimum is coming, which is what leading scientists in Britain and Russia are saying, that we're entering what's known as a period of, which might be, in fact, a mini ice age, a period of global cooling, because the sun's electromagnetic field is weakening. And this is a scientific fact. It's we've been through a period where the sun's electromagnetic field has been very active. This is a warmer period. This is the warming period that we've gone through, that they talk about global warming. It's not caused by greenhouse gases. It's caused by the sun, the heat and electromagnetic activity of the sun. That electromagnetic field of the sun blocks cosmic rays. When that field weakens, the cosmic rays get through, strike the oceans, create more clouds. A cloudy day is cooler than a sunny day. The Earth starts to cool. You get more floods and more rain. And this is what's already happened. You've seen the flooding in China. You've seen fluke snow in the summer. It snowed in Beijing in July. It snowed in eastern China, in western China in late June. It snowed in southern China in August in a place where they grow bananas. So you've had this very flukish weather, which is, of course, caused by the jet stream becoming erratic, carrying cold Arctic air south. Because why? Because the sun's electromagnetic field weakens and our jet stream becomes erratic. So the Chinese and the Russians both believe, if you really look at what their scientists believe, that global cooling is coming. And that means you could see 20% of the global food supply drying up and food shortages. That could be a lead into war, and in which you would want to eliminate a lot of people. And you would want to get a hold of this, the best farmland in the world at the best latitudes are here in the United States in the lower 48.
Yeah.
We have the good climate. We have this. We have the huge amounts of arable land. And of course, that's another consideration other than ideology. And of course, the power competition, which never ends.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. That's one of the things that's made us such a great nation is our ability to grow food and feed everybody else. So I was wondering, can you give us a little insight into the Chinese strategy of unrestricted warfare?
Well, believe it or not, unrestricted warfare is not China's doctrine. It was a book written by two Chinese colonels like 20 plus years ago. And unrestricted warfare is just, it's kind of comes from Chinese traditional military thought. It comes from Sun Tzu, Han Fei Tzu. It's a Chinese tradition of waging war by other means, you know, by using spies, by using sabotage, by using asymmetrical warfare, where they take advantage of us in various ways, like this pandemic. Something like that is even touched upon in the book. Weakening an enemy economically, using trade, using technology, using EMP weapons, using all kinds of disinformation kind of strategies to throw us out. I mean, look at how crazy this election is, how crazy the disinformation that we're being told.
Yes.
Information. You looked at all the Democratic candidates. I was very disappointed in President Trump and that he wouldn't refute the climate change nonsense. Climate change is an invention of the communists. It's a sabotage operation to sabotage the West economy. You think China and Russia follow any of the protocols, the Kyoto protocols? No, they don't.
No.
Or the Paris Treaty. They don't follow any of that stuff. China, Russia, no. No, that's for us. That's to impose costs on us so that we can no longer compete. And also this call for more and more government intervention in the economy and welfare state benefits for people. That corrupts our population, makes them less able to take care of themselves, and it takes the money out of the budget so we can't afford to defend ourselves. So again, and if you want to know how really serious this is, all you have to do is look at the testimony of the head of the Strategic Command back in February of this year. He said, our nuclear arsenal is way past its shelf life. We stopped manufacturing nuclear weapons in the early 90s. We haven't tested a nuclear weapon in almost 30 years. And our nuclear arsenal is about to become defunct because it's just like the stuff on your cupboard that has a date, an expiration date on it. Those warheads have an expiration date, and they're already attenuated. We don't know how effective they are. And we're not, what he pointed out is that we're not going to be able to manufacture a new nuclear warhead with this new program we have, which is very slow in coming on, until 2029. That's what his testimony says. And we're probably going to lose our nuclear arsenal between 2023 and 2024. So we're going to be without a nuclear deterrent in 3-4 years, 5 years at the outside. And then we have a 4-year gap before we get any new nuclear warheads in. Come on. This is deadly.
That's suicidal.
Serious business. Yeah. And the Democratic Congress, in response to his testimony, no, we're not going to do that. In fact, the Democratic candidates for president, like, we're not going to have a renewable nuclear warhead. So they want to disarm us.
Yeah.
But instead of actually getting rid of our nuclear weapons, just let them become obsolete and no longer useful over time. Let them wear out, you know, because those things, nuclear warheads, are made out of components that wear out.
And then all it takes, Then all it takes is the Chinese to send their Navy over to the West Coast and say, either give up or we bomb you from, you know, safe distance away. And they, you know, the president would have to capitulate because they have no response. And this is suicidal. It's like gun control, you know, take the guns away from all the law abiding and then only the criminals have guns. So this is just a nuclear gun that the left is trying to take away from us. They've been working at it for, you know, prior administration for 8 years. And now we've got this vulnerability, and China's got brand new stuff, and they're not being held back by a counter narrative in their country.
Yeah, and China and Russia are in on this together. China has been helped enormously by Russia in building up its nuclear missiles and nuclear weapons, and its naval anti-ship capacity.
Mm-hmm.
The Russians didn't do that. because they like us. They want us to go down just like the Chinese do. I mean, if you're the number two and number three world powers, you might want to get together to get rid of number one so you can move up in the rankings, mm-hmm. right? That's what happens in competition mm-hmm. all the time. People don't, you know, a chess game is a chess game. And too many people in this country take our existence and our security for granted as if somehow our security is guaranteed. Yeah, by what? By who? You know?
Yeah.
What is there, a defense fairy who is going to come in and wave a wand, you know, and you're going to be safe? No, there is no such thing. You can deride the U.S. military and say the Pentagon, the military-industrial complex, that's nonsense. You're alive today because of that.
Exactly.
You better thank your lucky stars that you've had a nuclear deterrent, because those people over there in Russia and China, those regimes, they've killed tens of millions of their own people.
Yeah.
What do you think? They're not going to wipe us out if they had a chance to own the world?
Yeah.
I mean, to own the world, you know, if I should quote Shakespeare from Othello, Iago's wife says, is talking to Othello's wife. This is a famous part of the Shakespeare play. And famously, Othello is jealous of his wife, thinks his wife is cheating on him. And she doesn't understand it because she's innocent. And she says, you know, I can't believe it that he thinks I've done this. He says, what kind, you know, what woman would do that for all the world? And Iago's wife says, well, for all the world, I might cheat on my husband to gain the world, because then the world would be mine and I could make all right in it. Right?
Yeah.
Well, that's the same logic of any totalitarian government. It doesn't matter how many we kill or what we do. If we own the world, then we can make the world new again. We can make it ours. We can make it the way we want it. See, this is what the real, you know, it's there's an element in communist ideology and in this Caesarism that is really, you could characterize it, the old word Caesarism, that thinks that if it controls the world, it's going to be the philosopher king that makes all right. Hmm. But of course, the pursuit of power isn't a pursuit that wise people engage in at all. And that killing people for that is not wise. Almost all the world conquerors have ended up badly. I think they all have ended up badly. I mean, Alexander the Great, Caesar, you know, Napoleon, Hitler.
Yeah.
They've all ended up badly. And you say, well, why? They were such geniuses, right? They were such geniuses because it isn't just about how smart you are. There's a higher power in charge of the world, and we can refer to providence, and you didn't make the world. You don't get to go decide how it goes along.
Exactly.
Not your deal. This is called the hubris of somebody mm-hmm. who aspires to take God's office away from him. Oh, gee, don't try that. You might not survive that attempt.
Yeah. The Democrat vice presidential nominee has already said that she wanted to defund the Pentagon. And if she becomes a president a month after they become the official president and vice president, then she will have the power to do that. Or even as vice president, influencing Biden, if they want to defund the Pentagon – what, I mean, they wanted to fund the police, they wanted to fund the Pentagon. What kind of national security and internal security can we expect?
Well, since I believe that Catherine Harris is a communist at heart, or that she's at least a fellow traveler with them, she's trying to fulfill their goals. And look, she can't, the president can't defund the military because the funding comes from Congress. And that was Obama's problem. I think Obama wanted to defund the military as much as possible. And he did everything he could to weaken the U.S. military. And the U.S. military weakened considerably under his 8 years. That's why they were so angry, because Trump came in and strengthened the military again. We might have been right at the brink of having Russia taking us out. And Russia was acting like, well, if Hillary Clinton's elected, there'll be a nuclear war. Why would there be? She was for weakening the military. She was for getting rid of the renewed nuclear warhead project. Why would they go to war? Because if she weakened it enough, they could take their chance.
Yeah.
And that's what you don't understand. War doesn't come when you're too strong. Each side is too strong to challenge the other. War comes when one side becomes so weak, the other's tempted to attack it. And as you see, when the Russians feigned weakness, and they did suffer a sort of weakening in 1992, we didn't go and attack them. We didn't bomb their cities. But I tell you, it's the same is not true the other way around. People who think we're evil, look, human beings are bad in general. But you see, we think in terms of money. Chairman Mao said, political power comes out of the barrel of a gun. We think it's all about money. So maybe we think, you know, sharp practice in finance is a good thing. I don't know. We're becoming less and less honest over time. But look, Chairman Mao says political power flows out of a barrel of a gun. If Chase Manhattan Bank says, no, it comes out of a bank account. Look, Mao says to him, look, you have all the money. Let me have all the guns. Then stick them up. Yeah. Now you give me all the money.
Yeah.
So which is it? I think Mao had it right. I think it is money over guns. And Machiavelli said this. Machiavelli said, gold is not the sinews of war, but good soldiers are. And he said, money cannot find good soldiers, but good soldiers will always get the cash.
That's good. I'm going to have to write that down.
That's from his commentaries on the first 10 books of Living. Huh. So, yeah, you have to really think these things through carefully to understand what what we're dealing with here. And it is a life and death thing. And the country, like I say, human beings don't like the truth, especially Americans. It was a funny... Nathan Sharansky, I think it was, the Soviet Russian dissident, said something very interesting. He said, in Russia, you have to have courage to tell the truth. In America, you have to have courage to see the truth.
Yeah, that's true today, that's for sure. There's a lot of people that are blind.
And I think that's really our problem. It's not that you can't. We have freedom to say the truth. I've been saying what I think is the truth for more than 20 years. Publicly on TV and the radio and podcasts like this for since 1998, for more than 22 years. But getting people to actually see it, it takes courage to see it because it's scary. The truth is unpleasant.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's why people don't tune in to programs that talk about civil defense because they don't want to bridge that gap into reality that they have a threat and they have to address it. It's easier to ignore it and have it slap you in the face later on when a major man-made or natural disaster hits. Oh, FEMA's going to take care of me. Well, actually, no, they're not. It's up to you to be your own first responder. But a lot of people, they just would rather be that ostrich with their head in the sand.
Yeah, and that is a big problem that we're talking about here, and it is a serious, serious, serious problem. Mm-hmm. I've tried everything I can to try to get through to people, but my analysis years ago, I wrote my first book between 33 and 30 years ago. And my analysis was then that I realized that nobody's going to read this book. I'm amazed that 10,000 copies of the book have been sold. And of course,
there's a big price on that book right now.
Yeah, I've seen that before, and I still have 750 copies in my garage. but I kind of want to hold on to them because I think it's going to become more valuable. But the thing is that. What I wrote, I mean, I was in my late 20s when I had my epiphany. So, you're kind of immature when you're that age. And I was trying to, that book is sort of a workshop of the mind where I was working out the problem. And basically, I was correct. Whatever errors I made in the book, and I look back at it and I think, it's still pretty right. I mean, I was pretty right. I just don't know. You just don't know how long it's going to take for this the bad aspects, the faulty aspects of our social system to play out with our enemy taking advantage of us. My new book is The Fool and His Enemy. And that's sort of the ultimate characteristic. We're kind of a fool and there's our enemy.
Yeah.
And our enemy has gotten us to turn against ourselves.
Yes.
If you look at this presidential contest, we've got the people on the right saying that Biden and his group are under the influence of China, which is true. And you've got the left saying, oh, no, they're under the influence of Russia. And you'll see this dividing line between Russia and China. It's like a two-card Monte. It's actually, they call it a scissors strategy. Russia would get behind India and China would get behind Pakistan. That way they could play the conflict from both sides to their advantage, use the Indo-Pakistani conflict to the advantage of Russia and China. They can use our domestic conflicts in a divide-and-conquer game against us domestically to cause a civil war here or a breakup of our Republican system, which would greatly weaken us and could lapse us into chaos or cause us all kinds of problems. And so that's what I think we're seeing, that process. And you see the role that the communists are playing in the form of Antifa and Black Lives Matter. And, you know, if people think, you know, the police are racist and we have to take power from the police and we have to take it away from the military and Trump is a racist, and wait a minute. If you look at the groups that are financing these messages, they're all connected to the communist global movement.
Yes.
They're connected to Beijing.
Yes.
In some cases, they've got connections going back to Moscow. They're part of communist apparatus and front groups. And wait a minute, you mean the Cold War didn't end? Yeah, I think it didn't end.
Well, we've got North Korea and Cuba involved in some of it that's going on in the streets as well. And that's, you know, going back to the Chinese consulate that was in Houston that was ordered closed. I mean, the reason they were closed is because their operators from that consulate were in the streets organizing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and of course, if you go back to Stalin's work, The Fundamentals of Leninism, it's a short book. It's very clear. Lenin, if you want to understand Marx and Lenin, which is where Marxism-Leninism, which is really the technical name of communism, also a dialectical materialism and scientific socialism. These are all names for communism. If you read Stalin had the virtue. Stalin was the great helmsman and teacher. And what he did is he took the very complicated, sophisticated writings of Lenin and Marx, and he brought them, he simplified them. He made them comprehensible to the people who would carry out the strategy. So if you really want to understand, you read Stalin. And Stalin said something, he said exactly what we see today. He said, Marxism-Leninism is not a religion. It's not a faith. It's a science of revolution, right? Marxism-Leninism is a science of revolution. It's a how to take power through revolution. And he said, so what is our strategy in this? Our strategy is to have an uprising in the house, in one's country, and to have other countries that are former colonial powers like China armed to the teeth to also go along with that revolution and come in and attack. So you have attack, uprising from within and attack from without. This is what, with China and the uprising in the U.S., we're seeing today.
And all that is culminating in this election. Actually, it probably won't end with the election. It'll probably go even further, because I predict that President Trump will remain the president going into the next 4 years, and the left is going to again deny his legitimacy, and they're going to be in the streets and in the neighborhoods and the suburbs and the rural areas. They're going to bring hell to everybody.
Yeah, indeed they will. So we may be on the verge of something really awful. I hope not, but I've been worried for a long time, because when you see that your own country is blind and has weaknesses that are being exploited repeatedly, and that we've been picked apart over years, and that we've been infiltrated by communism, and we've been undermined by the agents of China and their infiltration of our economy and the corruption of our government leaders. You see it with this scandal over Joe Biden's son. You know, this is, this is really frightening, and it has to do with our physical survival, whether we will exist as a society or not. And for anybody to reject that and say, oh, he's exaggerating, it's not that bad. No, I'm sorry. You know, you just aren't very well informed if you don't realize how dangerous this all is.
They're either ill-informed or they're agents of the misinformation. There's only two sides to that coin.
Well, anybody that picks up the wrong information becomes a carrier of the disease of disinformation, right?
Yes.
So we can all end up being fooled. I mean, but the problem is deception always requires that the dupe participate in his own deception. You know, you can't deceive me if I'm not willing to believe you.
Yeah.
And why am I willing to believe you? Because there's something corrupt in me that wants to believe in this, you know, rainbows and unicorns and happy futures that really aren't there, because I want to feel good instead of know the truth.
Yeah.
And that is a serious, hedonism is a serious problem, social problem. You just want to live for pleasure? Good luck with that.
Well, Jeff, this has been a great episode, and I want to thank you. And so that'll have to be the last word. Civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on our Facebook page, Civil Defense Radio, and on Twitter at civil_def_radio. And also check out our YouTube channel at Civil Defense Radio Podcast. And you'll find a couple actual videos there that we've done, and there'll be more to come. I wish to thank Jeff again for being a guest on our show, and I wish to thank you, our friends out there who listen to us on a regular basis. I really appreciate you being with us this week. So please, again, share, like, and comment on our shows. Okay? Be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.